We bring you another episode of No Doubter as we now close out the month of September and get closer and closer to the hunt for October. I'm your co-host, Travis Laughley, with Barrett Boom Bostic. We are your No Doubter team. How are you doing tonight, Boom?
I'm doing well, man. The season is almost over. These races are getting oh so tight, especially on the wild card front. We will definitely cover it all, but I'm here. I'm ready to go. My favorite time of the year is upon us. October, baby. Football and baseball all at the same time. It's just going to be sensory overload. But yeah, I mean, I'm just going to be glued to my TV a lot more than I usually am or should be. But yeah, I'm pumped, man. What about you?
I am as well, man. Is you know, doing kind of our prep for this show here. You know, there each time that we've done one of these recaps, there's been little things that keep kind of changing and among all these divisions and new storylines that develop and existing ones that refine. And goodness, there's just several divisions here where it's just absolutely crazy, and it's going to go down to the wire for the seeding, for the brackets, and for these wild card positions, and how this is all going to unfold once October hits. So we've got a lot to talk about tonight, and before we do that, we have to do what we always do to start off these shows. So, Boom, what is that?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have to obviously do our favorite segment of the show, and that's called Pour and Score. Because when you're watching the game in person or at home, and you know, and you're of age, above age of 21, you know, it's nice to enjoy the finer things in life. We like to give love to the locals, the finest establishments there, and that's why we like to start things off by responsibly enjoying some adult beverages. And because, ladies and gentlemen, whenever you pour, you score. So that's what we're gonna do, baby. Trav, what are you drinking
tonight? I've got the Daddy's Juice Box IPA. So the double IPA from Truevine Brewing Company.
Wow, going with the double.
Saying is integrity, community, love. Truevine Brewing Company is out of Tyler, Texas. The Daddy's Juice Box IPA is, as I say, double IPA, brewed with Simcoe, Citra, and Mosaic hops. And so it is 8.5 alcohol by volume and 30 IBUs. I've got my traditional, this has become Mrs. Renfro's former salsa jar, now emptied out, cleaned out, regular old mason jar that I use now to enjoy my beers. So got it cracked open.
Man, there are the juice boxes for the little ones, like I give to my little 2.5-year-old son. But daddy's got to have his juice box too. You know, I can have this and tell my son, I'm like, hey, yeah, you see this? Daddy's juice box too. Yeah, it just happens to be a double IPA that's 8.5% alcohol.
Daddy, what's a double IPA?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my son repeats what I say, so I got to be careful about that.
Yeah. So I take a look at this here, and you can see it. I would say that this, you know, the hue of it, it's not as translucent, not as hazy. It looks more kind of like your West Coast style IPA, I would say it looks like here. But it's a nice kind of dark gold to it, and I'm going to go ahead and give it a sip here. Oh, yeah, and this definitely has, I would say I can tell comparatively some of the other IPAs I've drank recently, especially ones that I've taste tested on our show here. This definitely has more of, yeah, that bold, not just that bold, more West Coast style look to it, but it also has kind of that taste to it as well. You feel the hops in there. It's thick and bold up front, but it goes down nice and smooth and has kind of that, has all the flavor it's talked about here. So yeah, I can taste it's a Mosaic IPA, as it talks about here on the can, so that's West Coast style. I can taste everything that's talked about here with the description. I can tell this is a good IPA year round. You can enjoy this IPA, still drink kind of some of these warmer days here at the beginning of fall, especially down here in Texas. And you know, it's not going to absolutely knock you out and make you think like, what was I thinking out of it? But you know, you could also, as the weather continues to cool down, as we finish out the rest of the year, you could also enjoy this as well. Maybe after, with a nice steak dinner, some mashed potatoes to go with it. I can tell this is just a good brew that really works for any sort of situation, any sort of food that you can want to pair with it. I would give Staddy's Juice Box I would put it a 8.5 out of 10.
Not too bad at all. I'm a West Coast IPA guy myself, but I'll tell you what, I'm eager to try that. Let's give our boys and Tyler some love. Daddy's Juice Box. Daddy needs his juice box sometimes.
Yes, sir. True Vine Brewing Company, Tyler, Texas. Give me East Texas some love, or as some might call it, Beast Texas.
Beast Texas. Where does that nickname come from?
I believe it comes from a friend of mine. From what he was telling me, it kind of comes essentially from the rich high school football tradition of East Texas. I mean, high school football being big all across Texas, but especially having some large powerhouse programs out there. Our very own Patrick Mahomes of Texas Tech University, baby, who played for White House High School just outside of Tyler, Texas. So Pat Mahomes, definitely giving an ode to him. He fits the Beast Texas moniker for sure.
Oh yeah, Beast Texas. That's the first time I've heard of that, but I'm going to stick around that. And while I'm down there, True Vine, baby, I'm making the trip for sure. Alrighty, well, you got yourself a double IPA, but can it contend with the bourbon that I have here? This is provided by the Smith family. This is one of my family and members, and this is my uncle, Tim Smith. Want to give him a huge shout out because he gifted me with a sampler of this very exquisite bourbon. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the George T. Stagg. That's right, George T. Stagg, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey from Buffalo Trace. For those bourbon aficionados out there, as soon as I said that, you're like, man, you got a good one. And I'll explain why. Buffalo Trace is one of the premier distilleries in the country, from straight in the heart of the bourbon capital, the country, Kentucky. They have an antique collection. Every year, they release 5 different batches. Along with the George T. Stagg, it's the Sazerac Rye 18-year-old, William LaRue Weller, Thomas H. Handy, Eagle Rare 17-year-old, and then the 5th one is the George T. Stagg. They release it every year in very small amounts, and they're very hard to get it, but my uncle Tim Smith had a bottle, and he was very kind and gracious enough to give me a swig. I want to give some massive love to the Smith family. They've been providing me with a whole slew of bourbons from their collection, so this one is for y'all, Smith family. Love you guys. Y'all are the best. Straight out of Plano, Texas. This right here, if you try to look up a George T. Stagg bottle, it's going to cost you around $1,000. So, I'm not joking. I looked online, and once I saw the price tag on that, I'm like, holy crap. Yeah, so, man, I don't know when he got this or if it was a bargain deal somewhere, but let's just say this 2-ounce sampler here might cost, I don't know, $100 or something like that if you just divide 1,000 by per ounce. I don't know, but by far the most expensive bourbon I've ever had. No way in chance I could afford this. Not even $100. Wow, but man, 1,000, golly. So, I mean, if you got money to spend, go for it, but
I mean, at least put it down on a credit card so you can get some airline miles out of that or something like that.
Exactly, man. Yeah. So better yet, just go to Buffalo Trace and hope to get a sampler from there. But anyway, this right here, this particular one is 112 proof. I want to go ahead and read some tasty notes here from their website. It says, this extremely hearty whiskey ages in new charred oak barrels with no less than 15 years. For no less than 15 years. Straight out of the barrel, uncut, unfiltered, the taste is powerful, flavorful, and intense. Open it up with a few drops of water, sit back, and ponder the wonders of the universe. Man, I'll be pondering wonders of the baseball universe. I do not have drops of water, which is a pro tip, but it kind of opens up the taste. A lot of people like to get distilled water and just put a little bit of drops in. It opens up the taste, which I haven't done that, but I'm not opposed to doing that. I'm just drinking it neat for now. Tasting notes, we got a lush toffee sweetness and dark chocolate with hints of vanilla, fudge, nougat, and molasses. Underlying notes of dates, tobacco, dark berry, spearmint, and a hint of coffee round out the palate. Wow, I haven't even tried it, and I'm just listening in here, but I'm in for a treat. Oh, look at that.
Got it in the traditional Glencairn glass.
As usual, with a very exquisite bourbon, I have to do it the only way, the right way. Oh, golly, that smell is just all these flavors.
Is that the literal smell of money right there?
Yes, it is. Wow. Oh, wow. That nose is incredible. I haven't even taken a sip, guys, but this, I could smell this all day. It's just so many, it's powerful flavor just smacking my nose, and it's bold flavors. All those tasting notes are just kind of filtering in. All right. I'm scared, guys. The sip is coming. A little bit more sip. Oh, I can smell the spearmint.
You just got to go right into it, man.
All right. No fear. No fear. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Wow. Oh, wow.
That strong?
Yes, but that's the most incredible aftertaste of a bourbon I've ever had, period. And I mean, you know, I've had, you know, golly, they gave me that bourbon from Tennessee, you know, and that was really good. That was smooth, but Travis, this is incredible. So it kind of hits you, and then it's just like, what? Just the aftertaste, like, what? It just kind of, the intensity is like,
is it like one type of intensities where you kind of almost like feel it radiating through all your senses? Like it goes down the back of your throat, you feel it in your nose, it's going up in your head, like the entire thing.
Yeah. Oh man, I took another sip and oh my gosh, it's just, this is an experience, ladies and gentlemen. If you're able to get this, I mean, this is, I'm very, very tempted to do 10 out of 10 for this. In fact, why not? I'm just going to do it. The sheer fact that, you know, it's priced as high as it is, that aftertaste experience, it is an experience. Let me tell you that right now. I mean, you get the spearmint for sure. And you got the coffee. I mean, it's just, there's so much going on in this. Buffalo Trace, man. That distillery is incredible. 10 out of 10. It's probably the first 10 out of 10 bourbon I've ever given.
I think I've yet to give a 10 out of 10 for beer on this show, or wine. So
yeah,
I think our first ever 10 out of 10 beverage tasting experience here on the show. And man, Buffalo Trace, y'all have lived up to it. You've earned it. According to Barrett here.
Yeah, I gave the Yellow Rose IPA a 10 out of 10, but I'm very biased on that. But it's so that was my 10 out of 10 beer, but this, again, George T. Stagg, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey from Buffalo Trace. And every time I get it, I get more flavors. And it's just, wow. Tim Smith, this goes out to you, Uncle Tim Smith. You are very generous to give me some of this. I'm going to be enjoying it tonight for sure. So we are all locked and loaded. You got your juice box. I got my amazing bourbon. And as we always like to end off this segment, we want to encourage our audience to please drink responsibly.
Always.
Always.
Well, that was definitely a great experience here for, as always, with our pour and score segment. Love just, you know, even though I I wasn't drinking the same thing as you, Bear. I'm overjoyed when, you know, we enjoy our experiences of the beverages that we get to have. Oh, yeah. And that, you know, we build, you know, we've tried things, new things for the first time on this show. We have, we've sampled things that we've had in the past, you know, just, we just couldn't wait to tell our audience about. I'm overjoyed for you, you know, that you, that it was well worth the investment here for this Buffalo Trace bourbon. And I am, and so congrats to you for a great drinking experience with the, you know, for as much money as that truly is worth there. I'm happy that, that the experience lived up to it. So,
there you go, man. You know, I'm sure the pass will cross to you one of these days. Cause, and you know, I've been introducing you to some bourbons here, and this one, man, put this on your radar, man. If you
absolutely, for sure. I will have to do so. I definitely won't forget this one.
Sea Stag, baby.
Yes, sir. Well, we got a bit to cover tonight as we get into the rest of the programming. We're going to jump here kind of into some main storylines here that overarch all of baseball before we get into our American League and National League breakdowns. And the very first thing that, that Boom, you're going to tackle here was a, you know, last time we talked about a very special game that happened in terms of kind of like pop cultural significance. But there was a very special game that just went down in Flushing Meadows, Queens, New York, the other night. An anniversary of a very obviously significant event here in our nation's history, and a time in which, you know, involved two teams, both from the same city, but of which, you know, like here in America, no matter where you are, you could not lose rooting for either team because we were all New Yorkers that evening, much like we were in the wake of just over 20 years ago. Boom, take it away with these storylines, and obviously the first one being this game that you'll talk about.
Yep. Believe it or not, guys, 20 years ago was 9/11, September 11, 2001. It's hard to believe that it's been 20 years. I mean, golly, two decades. It's been so much of a part of our life, a day which defined our lives. We all have our, what were you doing on that 9/11 day? And here we are 20 years later. Whoever was responsible for scheduling the games, A plus to them, because this was a Subway Series weekend game affair. You had the Mets playing the Yankees, so both New York teams playing each other on 9/11. It was an evening game. It happened in Citi Field. You had Bobby Valentine and Joe Torre, the manager for the Mets and Yankees respectively, back in 2001. Both those managers went out and simultaneously threw out the ceremonial first pitch. So those are infamous managers, especially Joe Torre. And, you know, they were able to share a moment there. Very emotional game, just stirring renditions of the national anthem. Everybody was singing. You had flyovers. You had both teams wearing hats and custom cleats, the hats representing and New York's first responders, NYPD. The Yankees ended up beating the Mets 8-7 in a very, you know, back and forth game. The Mets, however, won the series overall. They won Friday and Sunday night, but the Yankees did win on 9/11. Yeah, it's just, you know, you reference this game and it brings back the days where, you know, I mean, George Bush went out in Game 3 of the World Series and tossed out the ceremonial first pitch. Brings back memories of the Mets playing the Braves and Mike Piazza hitting the go-ahead two-run homer. It's just baseball bringing the country together. This is what this reminded me of. I don't know, Trav, were you catching some of this game?
Yeah, well, I was at a college football game Saturday night, and I think when I got home, I caught the very tail end of it, or I think it may have been SportsCenter programming, kind of highlighting the end of it. But it's, I mean, I think it just seriously, I've been looking forward to, you know, just kind of, I got chills kind of from a distance thinking about, you know, how cool it was going to be that this was, that this game was going to occur. I think, you know, especially as the season progressed and all the teams were welcoming fans back in full capacity, to their stadiums. I was thinking, you know, how, like, it just, that game wouldn't be the same if, you know, if they had to play at a limited capacity or for sure no fans at all in the stands like last year. But yeah, for to be able to, you know, bring fans of those two teams together from across the New York City metro out there to Citi Field for that game, to see that place packed, to see everybody cheering. It felt like catching the end of there. I believe Joe Buck was on the call for the game, and it had that sort of playoff atmosphere type of feeling just for a regular game, interleague game among two teams there in the same city. But it was just such a cool environment. And yeah, I think, you know, the My Piazza walk-off back from 20 years ago, I believe it was 9/21, 2001. So September 21st, 2001, I believe that was the first game back. It was the first baseball game in the city of New York back just 10 days after 9/11. And so that was obviously a huge emotional experience for that. Like I found a video on YouTube of the full game, and like I'm scrolling through the comments and somebody timestamped it just said the moment everybody's waiting for. And so I went down there, watched the walk off again. And that was pretty incredible. I think too, you know, thinking back as well to when George Bush threw out that ceremonial first pitch, that was such a wild experience. Like it was such a wild thing to think about. Of the reality is if I remember correctly from history, there were definitely, like, in those years to come, and you know, occasionally there're kind of like terror threats that are like put out there, like kind of warned for, like, hey, there's increased risk of terrorism around like major kind of like travel periods, holidays through certain airports in the country and around the world, things like that. But like, and there was that, I was watching like a documentary or some little mini series recently kind of highlighting that game of, you know, like President Bush was just so chill kind of there for the game, like, but like was in the clubhouse signing baseballs and doing autographs for first responders there, just kind of like chilling as if like really was like a normal day on the job or kind of special guest appearance there. But you know, like they had snipers up on the roof. They had basically had like decoy officials that were essentially refs that were essentially Secret Service members. Like they told President Bush, like, we cannot guarantee your safety going out there on the mound. Like, they're like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, are you signing off on this for yourself here? Because there is the potential possibility that like there could be a sniper like in the audience, like ready to kill you out there. Like, you might step up to the mound and you might get shot. Like, that was a legitimate possible concern. It's like crazy. That was the most high profile sporting event almost 2 months later in the city of New York since the attacks. And yeah, he just goes out there and throws a pretty dang good first pitch just kind of like has this swagger as he's walking off the mound. Like, yeah, I did that.
This was game three of the World Series against the Diamondbacks. He waited until game three. But yeah, you know, Derek Jeter telling him, whatever you do, don't bounce the ball, they'll boo you. and he's like, all right. And of course he throws a strike. So yeah, it's just so many memories. And you know, 20 years, I hope they continue to do special events like this. And there was all sports games that were happening on this day, college football, you know, the whole nine yards. They were all celebrating all other baseball games, but this one was particularly special because it's New York, and so wanted to give a shout out to that. It's definitely a memorable game. That it's a regular season game that's worth remembering. So
absolutely, that game, what we saw, you know, it brought a lot of unity among people from all walks of life. That game 20 years ago, both the Mets and the Yankees, this game here, we saw a lot of unity across the country from all of these celebrations and remembrance celebrations of America and remembrances of that day 20 years ago. So I hope, you know, we look at that and we continue to use sports as an opportunity to bring people together moving forward, because it's cool to see that happen.
Oh yeah, that's the one of the best aspects of sports. So, yep, that's definitely happened. Another quick news tidbit. The 9th no-hitter of the season. Man, this has been the year of the no-hitter. We've just shattered the previous record of, I believe it was 7 no-hitters in the modern era. And we're up to 9 people. We got about 2 weeks to go, and we're at 9 no-hitters so far. This is a combined no-hitter that the Brewers threw against the Indians. The Indians, this is the 3rd time they have been no-hit this season. They are dead last in payroll. They are oh so struggling. They just want to resurrect and rise from the ashes and become the Cleveland Guardians. And then, maybe then, along with the salary minimum, they will be great once again. But no, until then, they are responsible for 1/3 of the no-hitters this season. It was against the Brewers at the hands of Corbin Burnes, who is contending for a Cy Young, and Josh Hader. Those two no-hit the Indians. Josh Hader, one of the best closers in baseball. The Brew Crew, I'll talk about him later in my NL breakdown, but their pitching is scary good. You got the pitching of the White Sox on the AL, the pitching of the Brewers in the NL, and when those pitchers, I mean, when you face those good pitching staffs, even if you're not no hit, you're not going to have fun. I mean, pitching wins championships. So yeah. There you go.
I was going to bring this up when you dove in more to the Brew Crew later on your NL breakdown, but I'll just say it here. I just kind of had this thought in the back of my head of, you know, the Brewers have never seemed like a franchise that has like really paid extravagantly for their players, like traditionally through their history. I'm like, I wonder how far off they are from kind of traditionally like where someone like the Rays and their American League counterparts would stand in something like this. And it is true. Like I found a source that had like the breakdown of payrolls like going back to 1998. And so like for, but especially like within like the last 10 to 15 years, it's all like, you know, they, the Rays are down there and like the Brewers are not far ahead of them on average. They're probably on average, it's like they're just from eyeballing is probably like the 21st or 22nd best payroll in all of Major League Baseball if we're to look at over time. And so, yeah, the Brewers out there in the National League are not spending crazy amounts of money to get their success that they do. But they seem to manage things well, much like the Rays do. And it often keeps them in contention more years than not.
They got some stars over there, and we'll go over that later. But yeah, you know, a no hitter, it just adds to their accolades. And yep, I think it's, they're all, I mean, they're pretty much a lock in for the playoffs. So pretty much a lock in for the division. So the folks in Milwaukee celebrating, they're gonna be pouring and scoring up in Milwaukee for, you know, a little while longer. So
yeah, I would expect nothing less from the city of Milwaukee.
There you go, Brew Crew, baby. They got to live up to it. So, and then our last bit of news before we do the breakdowns was the Hall of Fame. I know it was a while ago, but on Wednesday, September the 8th, we had 4 esteemed members of baseball history get inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. They are now enshrined in Cooperstown. You have Larry Walker, Ted Simmons, Marvin Miller, and the captain, Derek Jeter, the most well-known of the bunch. Trav, let's just start off with Jeter. Throw the stats our way, my friend.
Derek Jeter's Major League Baseball career consisted of 3,465 hits, 260 home runs, .310 batting average, .377 on-base plus slugging percentage, .440 slugging percentage, and a 115 OPS, and to OPS plus, that is. And so
377 on base percentage.
Thank you for the correction. Sorry. But that, you know, this brings up a good point here with the OPS plus. So just OPS would be on base plus slugging. OPS plus is essentially, so that 115, like a 100 would just be like 100%, like in total of all players. So OPS plus is basically saying that Derek Jeter's on-base plus slugging percentage was 15% better than like the average bell curve of all Major League Baseball players throughout his career. So that's pretty incredible when you look at it. It's he brought both accuracy and power to the plate when he played. So he was a Rookie of the Year, 14-time All-Star, 5-time World Series champion, 5-time Gold Glove winner, 5-time Silver Slugger, AS MVP, and World Series MVP. Derek Jeter absolutely deserves enshrinement in Cooperstown. But, you know, it's I see increasing what feels like conversation around, was maybe Derek Jeter a little overrated in the grand scheme of everything? And Boom, I'd be interested to hear just kind of your thoughts around that, and whether you, whether you call BS or say, hey, you know, there's something maybe to that.
You know, I think it helps with him being on the Yankees and being a 5-time World Series champion. I think that really helps. His charisma helps as well. So I think he may be slightly overrated, but I mean, come on, even though he might be slightly overrated, like, to this day, people know who he is. He was the face of baseball for however long he played for the Yankees, solely for the Yankees. But in my opinion, as far as stats goes, while defensively he might not have been the best shortstop, if you're in the 3,000 hit club, boom, you're in automatically. I mean, well over 3,000 hits, by the way. I mean, he's in the top 20, I think, in terms of hits. I might just be throwing that out there. But I mean, come on. I mean, that alone is an impressive stat right there. Lifetime batting average of .310. I mean, come on. I mean, he did his job. And
he did more than his job.
Oh, yeah. And it's just, he deserves to be in Cooperstown for sure. His charisma, his offensive stats, he played in a ton of postseason games. He has like one of the records for like the most world's postseason games ever played in. You know, he was on a team with a lot of star-studded power, so he definitely didn't do it on his own. ESPN is coming out with a documentary called The Captain, which we can all watch and learn more about Derek Jeter, which, you know, I'm tempted to watch that. You know, you had Michael Jordan's The Last Dance, and now they have The Captain. So, you know, I'm sure it'll be good, but he deserves to be in. He might be slightly overrated, but it doesn't mean he was a good player. Wasn't a good player, so.
Yep, I would agree with you on all that. Yeah, oh, yeah. I think you know, I think a couple of people that just I think of with New York, with baseball and the New York Yankees that represented all the things that were right, that are right with the sport, have to be Derek Jeter and Mariano Rivera. Just the the gentleman, consummate professional. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, being clean cut is part of the is part of what comes with being a Yankee. But just the, like, go out there, do your job, and, you know, you let and, you know, in the traditional sense of the game, you let your performance speak for it without any sauce added to it.
Oh, yeah, there you go. I mean, Derek Jeter played with class, but, I mean, you bring up Mariano Rivera. Psh, I mean, Derek Jeter was one vote shy away of being unanimous, and he let that anonymous voter know it. Because when he went up to the stand, he's like, thank you all, in this, I'm paraphrasing, he's like, thank you all for voting me in, all except for the one person who didn't. You know, he let that person know, you didn't vote for me, you were the one and only person. But of course, Mariano Rivera, arguably the greatest relief pitcher in all of baseball history, he is the only unanimous voted person in Cooperstown. So, man, when you have Jeter and Mariano Rivera, you're going to win 5 World Series for sure. And you're going to make it more than that. You know, you'll lose to the Diamondbacks. But hey, I mean, golly, it's just those Yankees teams. They have not achieved glory since. They are oh so desperate to, by the way. But anyway, it's a lot of stars.
And we'll talk about them soon.
We will. Will they even make the postseason? They're still in it. We'll see. But anyway, you know, Jeter wasn't the only one. You know, he might have had Michael Jordan in the stands cheering him on, champs, you know, cheering on champs. But we had others. Canada's own Larry Walker, baby. Right fielder who played predominantly for the Colorado Rockies. 2,160 hits, 383 bombs, not too shabby, 313 batting average, 400 on base percentage, 565 slugging. Golly, those numbers are great. 141 OPS plus. A lot better than Jeter, I might add. Doesn't have as many hits, but he's got more bombs, and he's 41% better than the average player during his career. Dang. I mean, put that guy in the hall. I mean, he deserves it for sure. He was the MVP, 5-time All-Star, 7-time Gold Glove, 3-time Silver Slugger, 3-time batting title. So, Canada, baby, you got a guy in the hall. You know, I recognize his name for sure, you know, so there you go. He's in it. Then you got Ted Simmons, who played predominantly for the Cardinals. He had 2,472 hits, 248 homers, 348 on base percentage, 437 slugging, 118 OPS plus, 8-time All-Star, and a Silver Slugger. So pretty good, impressive numbers there. But last but not least, a guy who didn't get nearly as much attention is the one and only Marvin Miller. A lot of people don't know who this man is, but they should. Marvin Miller served as the executive director for the Major League Baseball Players Association from 1966 through 1982. He helped transform it into one of the strongest unions in the country. He fought for the players. He orchestrated the first ever collective bargaining agreement between MLB and the Players Association, and the players achieved free agency in 1976 during his tenure as the director because Curt Flood sacrificed his career to challenge the reserve clause, which was an antitrust exemption of Major League Baseball. We hope to do a historical deep dive into all of that. Why is it that you have Francisco Lindor, Gerrit Cole, you know, Mike Trout making $300-400+ million contracts? It's because of Curt Flood and Marvin Miller. These guys are heroes for the players. You know, with Curt Flood suing the MLB, with them winning the Supreme Court case, Marvin Miller fighting along his side, players have free agency, and they could, after a certain while, go and they can be in control of their own destiny and get their fair share of the pie. Marvin Miller, very, very iconic in that respect. A lot of people didn't want him in. And in fact, to his dying day in 2012, he didn't want to be in the Hall of Fame. He said, I think it's a sham. I don't want to be in it. If I'm ever voted in, I don't want anybody in my family to attend the ceremony. And they didn't. No one from his family wanted him to attend. Now, his son was saying, you know, yes, he deserves to be in, and I'm proud of my dad being in, but I'm not going to attend because he literally said, don't attend. So it's a mixed bag, you know. He deserves to be in. He's a baseball icon, but, you know, there's always that contention between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. By design, you know, the players are trying to get their fair share of the pie, and the owners are like, yeah, we want to keep it. So I don't know, but now people are saying Curt Flood should be in, and he absolutely should. I mean, his numbers speak for themselves, but I mean, if it weren't for Curt Flood, free agency wouldn't have existed. So again, deep dives coming your way, hopefully next season. But yeah, there you go.
Neat little tidbit of history there. And yeah, we've got, you know, once the off season comes, we will definitely keep you, our fans, entertained and in the loop with a lot of deep dive, content, looking in more to the history. You know, there's just something about when, you know, we get to the winter and, you know, you got kind of the colder evenings and you've got TV on and you're looking for something. I don't know why, but history programs just hit different for me, like in the winter when you're kind of all snuggled up and like trying to stay warm. I don't know. You're just like, for me, like I think deeper. I think more about the past, the present, and the future. That's kind of is, you know, it's like the hibernation season for us as people. So I think, you know, it's the perfect time for sure to do our deep dives. Yeah, really cool. Always looking, keep back at celebrating the past with the Hall of Fame induction in Cooperstown, and gets excited about what's to come with the future. And part of that future is right now here in the 2021 Major League Baseball season, a full season back after last year's weird 2-month regular season, heading right into the playoffs. Yep.
The marathon, baby.
yeah, of which then the World Series that year ended up happening at Globe Life Field here in Dallas, Fort Worth, between two teams that don't even play here, a neutral site game. But it's all back to the full, it's been the full 162-game season. All the teams playing with fans now in front of them, having true homes and aways, and about to have the pennant races coming up soon with in the postseason with the true home and away environments for each of those in the bracket as well. So we start with our American League breakdown, and that starts with, as has been the past couple of these breakdowns that we've done, we've talked the most about the American League East, which has just been chaos, and that does not change in today's program either. So first off, we start with the Rays, and they just continue to run away with this division right now. The team continues to be led by left fielder Randy Arozarena.
Arozarena.
My apologies. I am bad with names. So he has a .274 batting average, a .354 on base percentage, and a .462 slugging percentage. And they also leading is second baseman Brandon Lowe's 34 home runs, .238 batting average, 85 RBIs, and designated hitter Austin Meadows 99 RBIs, 25 home runs, and .232 batting average. GM Eric Neander just received a multi-year contract extension. So obviously things are going well in the front office right now, and the on-the-field results prove it. So congratulations to Mr. Neander. Number 10 prospect outfielder Josh Lowe was called up last Wednesday on September the 8th to the team, and he got his first ever hit of his MLB career on a debut, off a sliding pitch from Nathan Eovaldi. So congratulations to you, Mr. Lowe. Here's to a hopefully long, successful Major League Baseball career for you. And Nelson Cruz just became the oldest player in Major League Baseball history to hit 30 home runs in a year in a game against the Red Sox on Tuesday, dang, September 7th. He now passes Big Poppy, David Ortiz, and Darrell Evans. Okay. So, man. You know,
fine wine, baby.
Yes, aging like fine wine. And you know, Mr. Cruz, you might just win some fans back if it happens to come down to a pop fly out at the end of the game to win the World Series this year, or at least to make an advancement within the playoffs bracket. So well, we're just giving you a little good natured ribbon there. But it's a blessing and a curse continuing to look at Nelson Cruz's incredible career that he's had. But here's to you, Mr. Cruz.
There you go, baby.
And as if this division could be any crazier, three of the remaining four teams are now truly in the hunt for the two American League wildcard spots. The Yankees, while they're still right there, they have had a disastrous start to September. They've gone 2-8 in their last 10 games. After 18 errors on the season, manager Aaron Boone has moved Gleyber Torres from shortstop back to second base. Torres primarily played the position in 2018 and 2019. He took up shortstop after Didi Gregorius left the team as a free agent last year, and that resulted in Gio Urshela going from third base to shortstop, and DJ LeMahieu changing from second to third base. So perfect time to change things up yet again, as the Yankees are hoping to get one of these wild card spots. But yeah, Aaron Judge exited this past Sunday's game versus the Mets with dizziness, but this appears to just be an isolated incident without connection to anything from earlier this season. Judge remains an important part, without saying, of this lineup, hitting .293 and has 33 home runs and 82 RBIs on the year. Aaron, I feel for you, man. I've dealt with a little bit of dizziness and vertigo for the first time, really, in my life over the past few months. Here and there, it's not fun. I hope that that is not a continued thing for you, and that you can get back out there, stay out there consistently in the lineup through the remainder of the season, and continue to play at a high level. Yankees made history in all the wrong ways on Thursday, September 9th. They never held a lead in a four-game series and homestand, to say that as well, versus the Blue Jays. That was the first of such an occasion that has happened since 1924. My grandfather was born in 1924. So it's as old now as my my grandfather's life that has been since the Yankees never held a lead in a series versus the Blue Jays.
Wow.
That's just one of those, like, yeah, I say making history in all the wrong ways, because like with that's the type of thing, you know, with a rabid East Coast fan base like the Yankees, they know all those little nuances like that. And that's one of those type of things, is when you've got, when you've got a manager in a front office on the hot seat for like to get something done, or else be like packing your bags and looking for your next gig. That is negative. That is textbook negative energy right there. Like, you're going to hear from it. The New York sports media is going to let you know it. That's just one of those things, like, it's going to follow you around as you work to get to it. I'm calling it now. Oh, and I feel like could doom the Yankees. It's going to be, it could be a black cloud that can follow them over these last couple of weeks of the regular season here, and ultimately keep them out of a wild card position. So
yeah,
that's just my take. That is just a gut feel. I have no science, no data, anything on it, but just knowing that, like, I'm calling it on the spot. That's I'm not saying I'm superstitious. I might just be a little stitious, and I don't like that stat when it comes for the guys in the pinstripes.
We'll see. I mean, they're in the thick of it still, but we got a long 2 weeks.
That we do. And so, as of that game, they have grounded into 130 double plays on the season. That ties the Nationals for the most in Major League Baseball. Also, not a stat that you want. So,
yep.
The Blue Jays, though, they're a flip of the script. They're now 8-2 in their last 10 games. So, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. now has a Major League Baseball 45 leading home runs on the year. That's now more than Shohei Ohtani, and it's also more than his Cooperstown member father, Vlad Guerrero Sr., ever hit in his career.
Wow.
So that this young talent just continues to make his name in the league. Ultimately, this team really is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Robbie Ray Show. Vlad leads in batting average, home runs, and RBI. Robbie Ray is a killer, 269 ERA and 220 strikeouts to lead the way on the mound. The big questions just remain are, as we're closing out this regular season and the look at the potential playoff berth, are the bullpen depth. They've really just had kind of like an okay middle of the road ERA the second half of this season. And then we move on to the Boston Red Sox. The Boston Red Sox have been trending in the wrong direction as of lately, but they may be finding a spark at the right time as we record this episode. They just took a series and a couple of games from the Seattle Mariners on the road up there at T-Mobile Park. And the road woes have been many, fortunately, for this team. And with nearly half of their remaining schedule as we record this episode on the road, including their closing two series, it's a tall task for this team to finish strong, not only because of that, but because COVID just cannot give this team a break. Chris Sale has now hit the list after testing positive, but he could be back as soon as this this final homestand on the season. And on a better note, we can say is that reliever Hirozaku Sawamura was activated on Monday from the list. And so he joins Bogarts, Hernandez, Taylor, and Pivetta as notable names that are now back in the clubhouse. All of Major League Baseball, we're like fans, the team and fans alike, I feel whiplash from all the crazy roster moves that have been made for this team to battle through the adversity and plug in holes in the lineup until they get all their pieces back. They're starting to get those pieces back, but it's crunch time to regain that chemistry and press on over the last couple of weeks of the season. I believe they've got like at least a 70% plus likeliness based on the ESPN for making the postseason as a wild card. But there is, with the Red Sox, you know, it is it's a high standards franchise and a fan base as well. Another rabid East Coast fan base up there. And so it's been a nice surprise to see the Red Sox do as well as they have this year. But sure enough, you know, if they can't get beyond the wild card, it will be a disappointment for fans up in New England.
For sure.
Moving on to the AL Central. The White Sox are a near mathematical lock for the playoffs now, with ESPN officially projecting a 0% chance for the remaining divisional teams. Starter Lucas Giolito and shortstop Tim Anderson were activated from the IL as of this past Tuesday morning. Lance Lynn was also activated from the IL last Friday. Yasmani Grandal was chosen over James McCann to be the catcher going into this season, and I think it's safe to say that has paid dividends. Even though he missed some time due to knee surgery, he has 20 home runs, 56 RBI, and an OPS of 945 on the year. I think you can really appreciate what he has done. Franchise certainly has, the fans have, and be looking for what's to come, especially considering he's got some prior playoff experience with the Dodgers in the past. Moving on to the AL West. Astros fans, we can pretty much say it. But get ready for playoff baseball.
Yeah, that's right.
H-Town.
That's right, baby. Partying up in H-Town.
Starter Jake Odorizzi has entered the 10-day IL with right foot soreness from covering a play at first base the other day. Watch out for rookie Jake Meyers as we're finishing out the season and moving into the postseason. He's moved out to right field in place of Chaz McCormick. Meyers has been putting defensively on top of being on top of his game in the slash line at a greater than 300 batting average and OBP. And a greater than 500 slugging percentage as well. Michael Brantley was just placed on the IL with knee soreness. He's also missed 12 games earlier this year with a sore right hamstring. Hopefully the Astros can get him back. He's going to be an important piece for their postseason run. Boom, as I frequently throw back to when we get to the Astros here. I want kind of your latest insights of what you're seeing with the team, how you're feeling as they close out the regular season here, moving into October.
Oh yeah. You know, Jake can rake, baby. I love Jake and rake. He comes in and he just makes it happen. He's been really great to see. I think they started playing him before September, and boy, did we need him. You know, Chaz McCormick, he's not that bad either, but Jake and rake, I'm on the Jake bandwagon for sure. Michael Brantley, we need him back. This is a 330 plus hitter in the two hole. Alex Bregman has recently come back after missing almost 2 months, and he is making it happen. Altuve's coming into his own by just getting a ton of hits and actually starting to hit home runs again, which when Altuve hits homers, that's when you know your team's doing well. So it's their offense is still lights out, and the pitching is just holding on. Starting pitching, every once in a while you'll get blown up like Greinke did, and you know it, but they're solid. And our bullpen, you got Stanek, baby, you got Presley and Kendall Graveman, man, it's all coming together for the Astros. They're dangerous. top to bottom, they're dangerous, you know, and they don't expect Brantley to be out forever. You know, he's on the 10-day IL as of this recording for right knee soreness, but it's a long season. If they can lock in the division, you know, give him some time because, oh boy, do we need him. We need him so bad. We need our lineup to be crazy good. We need it to be dangerous in order to make a deep run into October. I chose them to win the World Series at the halfway point, and I'm sticking Homer. To it. Yeah, hey, you know, you can make fun of me all you want, but hey, you know, I mean, I still think they got it. Got to believe, maybe prove all the haters wrong.
Hey, I can say the same for my Rangers right now. I mean, even though we're finishing up this season and that's it for us, like I believe that there's reason to believe that over the next couple of years, the ship is gonna begin to right itself, and that return to postseason play and some of those great memories that we had back around 2010 and 2011, and the little sniffs at that we had in 2015 and 2016. We'll soon return, and hopefully for a true long-term stretch of building something special for that program. So yes, you always got to believe, man. You know, you believed for many years with your Astros when they were in the position that my Rangers are in right now, and eventually the pieces that you build on, it's like contributing to that IRA or that 401k. Like, you see the compounding value that just explodes over time. And and one day it's like you're there. So I look forward to that with my Rangers, and I look forward to hopefully hoisting that World Series title as well.
Oh yeah, I give it 10-20 years.
Well, I would like it sooner than that. The rest of us city probably would.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Moving on to the wild card picture. The Blue Jays, the Yankees, the Red Sox, Mariners, and A's are all within, basically it's an average of within three games of each other. They all are right now for fighting for these final two wild card spots. Seattle is a funny bunch. They are the only team on that list with a negative run differential. Yeah, just one of two teams on the list who have won more games than lost in our last 10. I actually believe that has changed now since I put together this list the other day. But the Mariners, overall, the point is the Mariners are having fun with this unique situation in their quest to break a 20-year playoff drought, as they're dubbing it the fun differential. Why is that? Because it's leading the clutch play and crazy game endings that make the team fun to watch and wonder what's going to happen next. They might spend much of the game down, but this team is known for tying up games late, wearing out relievers with long pitch counts, and then pushing across runs late in the game and ultimately coming out on top. The Mariners are also one of only two teams with two at least 30 home run players in Kyle Seager and Mitch Haniger. The A's, on the other hand, are moving in the wrong direction, having gone 3-7 over their last 10, and they're currently on a three-game losing streak. They need third baseman Matt Chapman to have better at-bats and hit better than he is now since his return from hip surgery. While Chris Bassitt may be on his way back to the clubhouse and recovering from a line drive that he took to the head on the road versus the White Sox last month, which was incredibly scary to watch. By the way, this team still needs more than him. The bullpen at one point was a calling card for this clubhouse, but that has now changed, unfortunately. In other news, the rumor mill is running strong with reports that Seattle will host the 2023 Major League Baseball All-Star Game at T-Mobile Park. I've yet to visit the stadium, and I personally will never, in my quest to go see a Major League Baseball game at all, at every single stadium and league, I will not consider a All-Star game counting towards that list. So, you know, if I've yet to see Seattle in a few years, I won't, if I were to go out to that, I wouldn't add it to my list. But I have visited the Pacific Northwest, did so a few years ago in the summer trip to Seattle, for work. It's a beautiful place. And if you've considered an All-Star game trip, why not make this one? Seattle truly, like, that period of midsummer around July, great weather, beautiful sunshine, long days. it's a good sports city to go visit. And so, yeah, keep it in mind if you're looking for an all-star game trip. I imagine it'll be a great environment along the Puget Sound there at T-Mobile Park for that game. Moving on to individual award status here. We're looking at it here for the American League. Cy Young odds, once again, friends of the ActionNetwork.com, as we pulled these from last time. Gerrit Cole right now leads at minus 133. We're really focusing down the top three at this point right now as the season winds down. Robbie Ray, number two, plus 160. Lance Lynn, number three at plus 310. For the MVP odds, Shohei Ohtani leading the way at minus 6,000. Vlad Guerrero Jr. in second at plus 1550. Number three, Matt Olson at plus 7250. You know, I think personally for me, like the MVP, the only thing I think I boost that could boost Vlad Guerrero Jr. Into the number one position would be getting Toronto into the postseason. But I think that's the only thing that could overtake Ohtani at this point.
Yeah, but even then, it's just upon Ohtani makes it happen from both sides, and yeah. You know he's a lock in. The Cy Young, however, you know it's turning into a three horse race. You know Garrett's been the favorite for a while, but Robbie Ray has been stout as of recent. So,
yep, it's the Robbie Ray show up there in Toronto.
Oh yeah, you know, but if Shohei wasn't batting, if he was just pitching or vice versa, just doing one of the two, then maybe Vlad would have a chance. But because Shohei can make it happen from both sides, it just Vlad doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from looking at these odds too, if I were to go with the top five from the most recent update, Shohei is actually, I think, moved into the top five now of Cy Young odds. Like, it's very, like, it's a huge exactly. drop off from Lance Lynn down to the fourth and fifth positions. But yeah, Shohei is that much of a, like, once in a generation type of talent. Yes, it was exactly. a break of it. He's kind of this, like long shot. Like something would seriously have to happen in the top three to get Ohtani in the position to possibly get into the conversation for winning the Cy Young this year. But yeah, once again, proof that Mr. Ohtani is a once in a generation talent for what he does both on the mound and at the dish.
There you go, baby. It's Shohei Ohtani, man. He's one of the faces of baseball. He's exciting to watch. You've seen him live, haven't you, Trav?
I have. And, you know, it's that definitely that game earlier in the summer. I went to go see the Rangers play the Angels with some friends. We were sitting just down in right field, right over near the foul pole. And, you know, I was more locked in on the game at the beginning, but it was hard kind of as time progressed with it because it was two teams playing like sub 500 teams there. So it was not great baseball to watch. But I mean, Ohtani at that point was really refining his game on the mound. And unfortunately, did not get to see an Ohtani bomb that evening at the plate. But I think, you know, he very much is a sort of spirit for the team and a rallying point around them for, you know, franchises still looking for answers beyond him, especially with Mike Trout out right now. So he's fun to watch. I mean, he draws a crowd for sure. Like people, right. Like there is, I would imagine as long as Ohtani is out there in Orange County with the Angels, he is, you are going to have fans of opposing teams that are going to be looking to make a trip out to Southern California or, you know, catch their home team when the Angels are in town and specifically be buying tickets around when he's on the mound. So that way they can see him both on the mound and on the dish because he's special to watch. And it's just like, oh, what's he going to do next? Like you can't but help but watch him right now. And this is, man, somebody like Ohtani, it's what Major League Baseball needs for sure.
Oh yeah, they need someone who's awesome. They need someone who does things that have never been done. They need someone who is arguably better than the likes of Babe Ruth, who is the greatest of all time. But Shohei Ohtani, baby, he's one of the best storylines of the year for sure. So there you go. The American League, the wild card, man. That wild card game, the Blue Jays. I saw the Blue Jays earlier this year. They're a fun team. Their whole lineup is just so stacked, man. George Springer, you know, Teoscar Hernandez, Marcus Semien, Kevin Biggio. Gurriel Jr. It's just, you go down the line, it would be fun to see them make the playoffs, Red Sox, Blue Jays duking it out, and then maybe the Blue Jays winning it out in the end, our neighbors to the north. But we'll see, man. Thanks for giving us that breakdown. But now,
take us away to the purest league. Where pitchers do make appearances on the mound, bat, potentially for the final ever time this year, depending on how the rules shake down next year. We're talking about the National League. So give us the breakdown, starting with the NL East. Boom.
Boom. Yes, that's right. Pitchers making their way on the mound as well as the batter box. That is what happens in the National League. The OG League, baby. We're starting it off in the West. And at this time, same old, baby. The Atlanta Braves, as I predicted, have maintained their lead. The Mets, their downfall has been oh so glorious, oh so spectacular. They have a 3.9% chance of making the playoffs. 6 games behind. Phillies are 4 games behind. They got Bryce Harper contending for an MVP. But the story of the NL East is simple. You have the Phillies and the Mets. They're not winning more games than the Braves. They're all just kind of, playing 500 ball in this last, 2 weeks to month. And when you're all playing 500 ball, the record stays the same. And the Braves have a 4-game lead, so they're just maintaining it. So, the time is running out for the Phillies and the Mets. I mean, you've got to get to a point where the Braves have a 4-game skid and one of these two teams, they have a 4-game win streak, but it's just, it just can't line up. I mean, the Braves, they have an 89.7% chance of making the playoffs. Very impressive for them, considering that still they do not have Acuña. They haven't had Acuña for the longest time, and yet their offense continues to make it happen, and their pitching tightens up. It keeps happening. Phillies, they're looking to Zach Wheeler. They're looking to Bryce Harper, but they just can't make it happen. So will this trend continue? We will see for sure. Moving on into the Central, it's all Brew Crew all day long, baby, as it has been for the longest time. They will make the playoffs. It's a 100% chance of going to the playoffs.
No, really?
Oh, yeah, no, really? 12 and a half games ahead of the Cardinals, 14 games ahead of the Reds. They're going to clinch the division anytime soon. It's going to happen. It's an insurmountable lead. But you got Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, Josh Hader, Pat the pitching helm. And then you got Christian Yelich, baby, making it rake from the left side of the plate. I mean, golly, this team, they're making it happen. And when you do that consistently, it leads to good things. But I want to give more in-depth highlights to two teams, and only two teams, in this NL breakdown, because I haven't really done it in all of my NL breakdowns. And that are the follow-ups, the Cincinnati Reds and the St. Louis Cardinals. Why do these teams matter? Why? They have no chance at the division, but they have a chance at the wild card, and that's why I will bring them up. We've got to understand why they are doing so well, why they are worth mentioning. Let's start with the Cincinnati Reds. They've won 14 of their last 30 games, but yet they are still in the thick of it. 5th in MLB, 2nd in NL and OPS, 756. 6th in MLB, 3rd in the NL for slugging at .428, 7th in the MLB, 4th in the NL for on-base percentage .328, and 6th in MLB, 2nd in the NL in batting average and 249. That shows it right there. They're in roughly top five for sure territory in the NL, top five MLB territory when it comes to offense. I mean, their offense is making it happen, baby. 710 runs scored. That is by far the most in the Central. It's most than anybody in the East. Your NL West style numbers right there. And I mean, just look at it. Nick Castellanos, baby, 314 batting average, 368 on base percentage, 576 slugging, 29 homers. And then you got the rookie, Jonathan India, who could potentially win Rookie of the Year, by the way. Just kind of filling in that second base position, plays a little bit of short as well. Slashing 272, 378, 465. Not too bad at all, with 20 bombs for a rookie. Man, get out of here. I was thinking Jazz Chisholm was going to win at the midway point, but Jonathan in India is like, I'm going to come in and I'm going to hold my own. And then you got Joey Votto, baby, first baseman. He's in the 2000 hit club as of recent, slashing 264, 366, 543, 30 bombs on the year. They got some powerhouse guys. Jesse Winkler has been on the IL. He is an all-star. He will begin his rehab assignment. He begun it, shall I say, on September the 14th. And so since he begun his rehab assignment, by the time this episode comes out, he might be back in the lineup. And the Reds, they need him back, baby. He's slashing 307, 395, 560. That's batting average, on base, slugging, respectively. 24 bombs. Man, if they can have Nick Castellanos and Winkler, there are two all-stars in the outfield along with India and Votto. They're going to be scary for sure. So the whole point is that they got powerhouse, baby. And with Winkler on the verge of coming back, they might just make it to the wild card, which we will talk about later. But they have to contend with the likes of the St. Louis Cardinals. It was 10 years ago, which we covered earlier on this podcast, that the Cardinals fought their way into wild card contention. In that year, they had Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright, who was out for the season. But they were both on the roster, whatever you want to call it. And 10 years ago, they ended up winning the whole thing against a team that will remain nameless. But here we are, 10 years later, and they are trying to repeat it. It's once in a blue moon. The stars are aligned, and the Cardinals, they want in on the action. They got Nolan Arenado, baby. They got the big boy playing third base. They want in on the action, and they did what they so often do. They said, Oh, gee, look at the time. It's September. We got to get our act together. And they have. They've won 12 of their last 20 games, 6 of their last 10. Offensively and pitching wise, you know, they don't really stand out. They're middle of the pack, or, you know, just in the middle when it comes to the NL and MLB, respectively. But they have a few playmakers on their team, even though they're not scoring that many runs. But what's keeping them in is they got these players here. Nolan Arenado, baby, their prize possession. Slashing 254, 309, 497 with 31 bombs. Not too shabby. But even more impressive, arguably, Paul Goldschmidt with the first base, slashing 285, 357, 484 with 25 bombs. And then you got Tyler O'Neill coming to his fourth year playing left field, slashing 280, 349, 525 with a 26 bombs, baby. You got some playmakers on the squad. Their pitching staff isn't elite as a whole, but you have Adam Wainwright throwing to Yadier Molina. Just recently, they celebrated their 300th game together. where they were Adam Wainwright started, and so did Yadier Molina. These two dinosaurs are on the team. They are veterans on the squad. They have playoff experience, and they are leading it. And Wainwright, he's been around for a long time, but he's secretly having a solid year. A 2.88 ERA, 1.03 whip, 167 strikeouts, 7.9 strikeouts for 9 innings. You know, that's not elite numbers. It ain't Scherzer. It ain't Gerrit Cole. But hey, it's solid. And you know what? They're doing just enough. They're sneaking their way in to the conversation. And the St. Louis fan base is rejoicing because they are plentiful and they are excited. I'll explain how well they're doing when I discuss the wild card. But before I do that, I move on to the West, the NL West. Those pesky Giants, they are not little Giants anymore. They have regained the edge over the Dodgers and were the first MLB team to clinch a playoff berth. Their first since 2016. They are going strong with a 9-game win streak, winning 9 of their last 10 games. They will not quit. Their manager, Gabe Kapler, Ben, he's in contention for manager of the year. First playoff appearance in 5 years. Psh, get out of here. I mean, it's just the Giants, they've made it to the top of our power rankings way too often, and they deserve it for sure. But the mighty Dodgers, the number one team in payroll at $262 million, they are strong on their tail, but they cannot seem to surpass them. They briefly caught up with them, but the Giants are pulling away. But the Dodgers became the second team to clinch the playoff berth. 100% chance they will make it. Either one way or another, they will make it. So, congratulations. You know, money well spent. You're actually going to make it. Will you win? We will see. But they're on a 5-game win streak, won 7 of their last 10 games. So, you got the Titans duking it out in the NL West, and they're going toe-to-toe. They, you know, the Giants barely won more games against the Dodgers in their 19-game series. It was quite a matchup for sure. So it's just the two-horse races, Giants-Dodgers, and all the while leaving in the dust the San Diego Padres. They're on a 5-game losing streak as of this recording. And yet, despite their fall from grace, their fall from relevancy, they still have a chance. 26.7% chance of making the playoffs. And now, without further ado, the wild card picture. I've talked about these teams long enough. The St. Louis Cardinals, much like they did 10 years ago, are in the lead for that second wild card spot. They have a half game lead over the Padres and the Reds. The Phillies are 3 games behind, and the Mets are 4 games behind. So there you go. Much like the AL, Cardinals, Padres, Reds. Who will press on? I think the Reds, man, I think they have too much going for them. I mean, a lot of people are choosing them to make that second spot, but I think they're the favorites, even though the Cardinals are just barely ahead. I just think that lineup's too scary, but who knows? The Cardinals, they have history. But you can never count the Padres out either. I mean, they got stars on their team too, but It's going to be exciting for sure. And as for the Phillies and Mets, 3 games, 4 games in a 2-week span. That's a lot. That's a lot to ask for. I mean, you know, Phillies 18% chance, but 3.9% chance for the Mets. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. We will see. And then rounding it out, we got the individual award status. We got the Cy Young. We got Walker Buehler, still barely leading with plus 168. Corbin Burns of the Milwaukee Brewers. Walker Buehler's with the Dodgers, by the way. But Burns with the Brewers at plus 173. Max Scherzer has catapulted from the fifth spot to the third spot at plus 228. Zach Wheeler plus 1,000. Brandon Woodruff plus 1,200. Max Scherzer, he's on a tear. That is the story of the Cy Young for the NL side. Since joining the Dodgers, Max Scherzer has a 0.88 ERA, a 0.667 whip, 12.7 strikeouts per nine innings. He is 6-0 in his win-loss record, 14.4 strikeouts per walks. I mean, these numbers are Jacob deGrom good. That's just flat out. And Scherzer, he's there with his boy Trey Turner with his smooth slides. And he's like, this is my team, baby. I mean, the Dodgers, they won the trade deadline. And Max Scherzer is like, you know what? I'm going to pay the dividends. And I think he's going to be a sneaky win, maybe. I mean, Buehler and Burns, their numbers are similar. They're very solid starting pitchers. But Scherzer, he has the momentum. But at the end of the day, we'll see. And then last but not least, the MVP. The odds, very, very tight. You got Tatis at minus 280. Bryce Harper at plus 380. Freddie Freeman plus 950. Max Muncy at 1,200. This is a two-horse race for the NL MVP. You know, we talked about their numbers in the last time, but... You know, at the end of the day, we'll see. I think Tatis still has the edge, although Bryce, you know, he's done all he can, and, you know, bravo to him, but we will see who will be crowned in glory. So, there you go. That's the story of the leagues. It's the wild card. Divisions, pretty set in stone, but those wild card races, man. And then all about... that one game do or die, man, you play 162 games and then it all comes down to one. I don't know, Trav, what are your thoughts? Do you think we should go to like the wild card round being like a best of three games?
It's an excellent question. Why not? Like what, you know, you have everything else as your best of seven. So yeah. why not give it a best of three shot and try it that way? I think, you know, it's more baseball to watch. It's, you know, you see deeper into a clubhouse and a rotation, and I think, you know, it preps the potentially wild card winners for deeper runs, you know, playing more games in there. I think, you know, hey, more baseball cannot be a bad thing. So I'm open to it. What about you?
I'm definitely open to it as well. You know, it's the one game wild card. It's, you know, it's exciting because it's all on the line. You know, and then the 2020 season, they expanded the playoffs. They had it where the wild card round was best of three, division best of five, although the division is always best of five, and then the championship series is best of seven, and the World Series is best of seven, you know. But I mean, I'm for it. It's just you're fighting so hard for these wild card games, and then it all comes down to one game, and I just don't know about that. I think playoffs will be expanded. I just hope it's not half the teams every year make it. But just maybe expand it just enough to where maybe, you know, the one seed gets a bye, and then you got a best of three round for the wild card, and then you go into the division series. So I'm definitely for it, just as long as it's like not like last year. And last year was okay because it's a shortened season, but I sure hope so, because
yeah, last year was an anomaly.
Oh, yeah. You know, because I'm all for, if you win the division, boom, you're in a best of five. You're good to go. But these wild cards are stressful. It's exciting. It's dramatic, yeah. But it's also stressful.
Definitely. All right. Well, we're going to get next into here to round out our show with a couple mailbag questions we have. So first mailbag question comes from one of our patrons through our Patreon program, Barrett Boom Bostick's father himself, Tad Bostick. We want to invite everyone to look into our Patreon program, one of our membership tiers that we have available there. Check them all out. We have four of them: prospect, rookie, veteran, legend, for each different levels of different access that you get to the No Doubter community. Check them out. Get in there. And we especially want you to do that, because when you're a patron, no matter what level you're part of, you get preferred access to our mailbag. And that moves whatever you send us up to the top, and we make sure to answer here on our show. And in this situation, Tad was gracious enough to send us a question here this week. And his question is, can you give an example of two teams that are managing their September rosters well, and then two that are not managing them so well? For example, I'm seeing a lot of guys on the Astros that I've just never heard of. They seem to be doing okay. Lots of dynamics going on, though. Just wondering how other teams are faring. Excellent question, Tad. Definitely challenged Barrett and I a little bit, just in terms of some more limited time that that we had going into this episode here. I think, you know, Boom, you're probably going to go a bit more in depth with your takes here than I will. So go on ahead and lead us off here of what you're seeing so far.
Yeah, thanks, Dad. Thanks for the question. As for teams that aren't managing their rosters well, that's kind of hard to track. But as far as notable call-ups, I've, you know, dug into a little bit. And, you know, those pesky Giants, you know, they're doing everything right. And you know what they did? They decided to call up their number two prospect, Joey Bart, who is a catcher, to shore up the catcher position along with Buster Posey. He's played in two games and it's got two hits and one RBI so far. But they have been wanting to bring him up for a long time. Again, he's their number two prospect. Buster Posey, he's not going out without a fight, but he cannot last forever. But Joey Bart's the future on the Giants, and, you know, you get 28 men, you get an extra two guys, so, I mean, why not? So that was a very notable call-up there. It can only help them, because he's just doing that well in the minor league level. And as for the Astros, Dad, a fellow Astros fan as such as myself, you talk about these guys being called up from the Astros, who you've never heard of them. I've never heard of them either, but you know who we know now? His name is Jose Siri, baby. Hey, Siri. You know, show me a home run. And that's what he did. In his first ever start, he became the first player in baseball history, this is for the Astros, to have over four hits and over five RBIs in his first start. Man, in his first start, he hit two bombs, baby. Four hits total, five RBIs. Jose Siri, baby. Astros keep calling up players. Astros, their prospects are notoriously underrated. They're never ranked in the top, you know, 100, certainly not the top 50 or top 10. And yet when we call them up, they're like, you know, forget you guys. We're going to do good anyway. You know, Jake Myers, as Travis alluded to, he is Mr. Jake Can Rake. And then Jose Siri, baby. You know, he's been in our minor leagues for a while. And here he is just making it happen. So those are some notables on my end. What about you, Trav?
Yeah, definitely. So I think the first I'm going to point to would definitely be Tampa Bay for bringing up Josh Lowe. You know, I mean, Tampa really has not been on the injury front, I think, compared to other teams. Tampa has had a phenomenal year. But going ahead and bringing up number 10 overall prospect into the big leagues to go on ahead and get the experience of playing at the top of the leagues there is, and gets his first hit in that first game that he's in the league. And, you know, I think, like, giving... another respect too. Like, this is bringing up a top prospect. This gives the fans something to be excited about moving forward. Like, you know, for a franchise like the Rays that are known for, these are like the spreadsheet kings of working out like low payroll, but just like scrutinizing analytics. But this is a guy, it's like, you know, they have committed to within their farm system and bringing up. And it's like, hey, you want to get more people in the trop for games in the future. You want guys like Josh Lowe front and center. Exactly. So it's that I'd have to say, yeah, you know, the Rays have not had the same sort of issues where they've had to manage a lot of roster moves here to close out the season, to as other teams have. But, you know, I think something like that, like, I just go and help. I'll bump you up for bringing up a prospect like this, kind of as you go into the as we're heading into the playoffs. I'd also say, yeah, with both of these two, like, I don't really have anything to point at, like, okay, I'm really critical of it. I would say for the Red Sox, I would just give them props for, I believe, you know, they went through kind of like this around like a month long stretch of like dealing with these different COVID issues. They went 8-8 ultimately in it. And yeah, like some of these guys, like these names, like, who are you that are coming through here? But yeah, exactly. They've filled these positions, and to like just go 500. I mean, that's, yeah, it's just kind of like when, like in football, when your starting quarterback gets injured, you've hope that your backup quarterback that you have signed can come in and get you maybe like two or three and four down the stretch, at best. Like that would be great for you, when you're dealing with that sort of injury. And I think, you know, to see the moves that they've made, into ultimately basically be a 500 team and still keep themselves in the position to most likely be a wild card team going forward, I'd have to say the Red Sox also too have managed their lineup issues and needs as well as you can, all things considered.
There you go. I mean, it ain't like the old days where your rosters expand to 40 and you can just go absolutely crazy. But hey, every person counts. So you got the teams, all teams that are contending, by the way, they are making the moves. They want it, baby. So there you go.
Our next question comes from Don Hale. Travis, like me, your favorite Major League Baseball team is the Rangers and Barrett's is the Astros. Name your favorite player that most fans wouldn't know or remember. Mine is Pete Incaviglia. Or I hope, I feel like a
Incaviglia.
I botched that name completely. He was drafted out of OSU in 1985 by the Expos, but was traded later that year to the Rangers. He went straight to the bigs and holds the Texas Rangers rookie home run record at 30, which will probably be broken by Adelis Garcia this year. He is my favorite because he was the epitome of a blue-collar player. Always looked like he needed to shave, had a beer belly, would fight anybody anytime, and never met a pitch he didn't like. I saw him once accidentally hit an Oppo Taco that was about eye level. I look forward to hearing your answers. Barrett, you have your answer down here first to provide to Don.
Oh, man. It's all about those players who we don't know and we can't pronounce their names. Those are the fun ones, man, Don. That was awesome. Man, the current rookie home run leader, I'll look up his stats real quick after I mentioned my player, though, and it took a while for me to think of someone whose name I frequently recognized, and I had to go back to my days at the Astrodome. Very, you know, had the privilege of going to the Astrodome and seeing the old school NL Astros. And I had names that I thought, and I was going to do Billy Wagner, but, you know, he's becoming better known. And Lance Berkman, yeah, I mean, you know, these names, you know, they're a little bit scratching below the surface. They're not known by absolutely everybody, but, you know, even, you know, relative baseball fans, they can recognize them. But this is a name that no one can recognize. I can guarantee you that. But in my days of going to the Dome as a wee little lad, I would hear this guy's name. I would see him in the lineup, and he would make stuff happen. His name is Derek Bell. baby. He played for 10 years in the bigs, and he played with the Astros from 1995 through 1999. He was an outfielder, and man, Derek Bell, baby. Every time he would make stuff happen. I mean, look at this. 95 through 99, all in the dome, and I for sure saw him. He was batting like 334, 263, 276, 314. I mean, you know, these are some pretty good numbers here. Home runs, I mean, 17, 15, 22, 12. I mean, not that bad. I don't know. I mean, is in his best year, 1998, he had a 125 OPS plus, which is pretty rock solid if you think about it. He led the entire league in sac flies that year with 10. Think about the small ball game. I mean, dang, that's awesome. It was hard to overshadow Bagwell and Biggio, but Derek Bell, I mean, I kept hearing his name and I'm just like, all right, this guy makes stuff happen. When I would go to games, he would make stuff happen. And I had a friend named David Bell, and the names were similar. And so I'm like, yeah, it's like he's David Bell, but it's Derek Bell. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, I mean, there you go. So that's my answer. What about you, Trav?
Don, I appreciate the question here. My answer would be former pitcher for the Texas Rangers, Doug Davis.
There you go.
Doug Davis was also he also kind of a late 90s guy. He began his Major League Baseball career with the Rangers in 1999, August of 99, and played with the club through 2003, though he only had 10 starts in 2002 and only one in 2003, I believe, due to injury. And I remember, I don't have quite the, you know, like in-depth like story behind your choice with Derek Bell that you do, Boom. But I remember Doug Davis just because of some of my earliest memories of watching Major League Baseball games. And it seemed like whenever I would walk into the living room with my dad had the TV on for a Rangers game during that time as a kid, that Doug Davis was the starting pitcher. And, you know, there was just kind of this feeling like in the back of my head as I remembered his name, like there was something like there had to be something like interesting about his playing style, his pitching that I didn't really remember. I just didn't think of, I couldn't fully process, you know, like that young with like not a whole lot of knowledge of the game and before like I really became a true baseball fan, but was he was known for having kind of like this windup that was almost like a two-stage motion that a lot of Japanese pitchers used. And so he just had a very like interesting delivery of the ball. And had four main balls they worked with: a four-seam fastball ranged between 84 and 87 miles per hour, a cutter at 80, 84 miles per hour, a curveball at 68, 72 miles per hour, and a changeup ranging from 78 to 81. By the time they finished his career in 2011, that was he had the slowest fastball among left-handed starters. But yeah, also just like a very blue collar working class kind of guy, plays college ball at the City College of San Francisco. Had a win-loss record in his career of 92, 108, 444 ERA, over 1200 strikeouts, and about a 12-year career. So just a working class on the mound kind of guy, that one of my first earliest memories of baseball and the Rangers, during that time of, the late 90s and early 2000s, where they kind of sniffed a little bit of success and also had some down years, but also had a lot of really good names that brought attention to the club.
There you go, man. It's the unsung heroes of our hometown franchises.
Absolutely. So,
There you go. Those are some good questions. Thank you all for your questions. As a reminder to our audience, you can send us questions at any point in time. You can email it to them at nodoubterpodcast@gmail.com. If you are a patron, you will be prioritized, but the general public, anybody can submit us a question at any point in time. It could be when we ask for it. It can just be when it pops into your head at any time. Just feel free to shoot us an email, nodoubterpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out to us. It's a direct line. So either that or our Twitter, you know, we'd love to get your questions. So thank you all very much. And before we wrap things up, we do want to give a sneak peek. Ladies and gentlemen, next week's episode is going to be very especially special. We are interviewing an up-and-coming baseball YouTuber named Isaac. His YouTube channel, iTalk Studios. This was someone who I came across on my radar. He's relatively new into the baseball YouTube space. And he is making a name for himself, ladies and gentlemen. He's doing a lot of topical baseball episodes. You know, it's hard to separate yourself in the YouTube baseball sphere. It's like, do you do recap episodes? Do you do top tens? I mean, but this guy, he does in-depth YouTube, in-depth topical episodes, topical episodes on, you know, what's happening in the here and now, all, you know, while going to college, by the way. And, you know, his interview will be out next week, again, named Isaac, iTalk Studios. Check it out. Look it up. 26,000 subscribers. And since he joined, he has over 8.5 million total views. He is a content creator. He is, so show him some love. We're going to give his full breakdown interview. It'll be next week. I'm excited for it, Trav. How about you?
Dude, this is huge for us. Just kind of, you know, tooting our own horn as creators ourselves. This is a major opportunity for us. We're looking forward to starting kind of a build of our network here among other creators with Isaac. Looking forward to getting to know him more. And for him to be able to put in a good word for us afterwards, continue to be able to reach out to more creators, start building that that rapport and that that reputation among the rest of the community. So I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely. I mean, interviews are always fun, and interviewing someone that is in the same space with the same kind of aspirations that we have is going to be incredible. So I am stoked for it, for sure. And with that in mind, we're finishing up this week's episode of No Doubter. It's been an awesome time recapping what's been going on in Major League Baseball here, leaning into these last couple of weeks of the regular season. We really appreciate everyone who's tuned in today. Please help us out by subscribing to the podcast today so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Please leave us a review. Let us know how you feel about what you're hearing right now. Any sort of recommendations of what you would like to hear or improve with our content moving into the future. We are always open to any feedback so we can make this program better all the time. Go ahead and give us a like on Facebook and also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. That's with both our No Doubter accounts and Twitter and Instagram. We also have the information for Boom and I's personal accounts in there as well. We invite you to get connected with us and keep up to date about what's going on with No Doubter and in our lives. Join our Patreon today so you can get an even greater level of access to No Doubter and help ensure that we can continue to bring you more of your favorite baseball content. And check out our merch store so you can get decked out in your favorite No Doubter gear, such as mugs, t-shirts, hoodies, baseball shirts, phone cases, many more items. You'll see all the important links in the description below for everything that we've just talked about here. We've had a fun one today. October is right around the corner. A lot of great baseball to come. Boom. What do we remind our audience to do every single week?
Every single week, whatever you're doing, ladies and gentlemen, no matter what you're doing in your life, be sure to go at it. Just go at it all out. Bat 400. Swing for the fences. It's the only way to go. Baseball season is almost over, so let's all swing for the fences together as October baby comes soon. We will see y'all next week for our exclusive interview with Isaac from iTalk Studios, and then we'll be back with you later to round out the season and come into playoff, baby. This is all that it's happening, baby. Just be sure to stick around. Let's finish it off strong. Good night, everybody. We will see y'all next week.
See ya.
This episode of No Doubter was produced by Eric Bostick and Travis Loughley and edited by Travis Bostick. Our logo was designed by Lindsay Silblick.